This is the 5-Point Play Podcast, the Die Hard Duke Basketball Fans Podcast. Woo! Here we go. Now we're in the stretch run, boys. We got the old guard. AC, yes, Jack. Pablo's out tonight. He may pop in. We don't know. He may pop in, but we'll see. Jack, I have to try. Just for Pablo's
here. Pablo's not here. You did it.
I had to do that for Pablo. But look, real quick, Duke is, again, look, we've said it before, we've said it again. Duke is trending. We're going in the right direction. It may have been one of the better all-around performances that we've seen from a Duke team this season against UVA. You know, I was at the Louisville game. I thought it was kind of sloppy. I think John Shire said the same thing after the game. It was sloppy for a lot of it. But Louisville was just a terrible team, Jack. They're just a bad team.
They are. And that's bad for the ACC.
It is. And, you know, you just kind of go through the motions there and take care of business, win by 25. By the way, your boy TK said it was going to be 84-60. It was 84-59. My bad.
I said 85-55. I want to hear it.
Yeah, well,
last year when we played, I got the score perfect. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you did.
So we're just focusing on this year, Jack. This year alone. but look, all joking aside, a lot of things to be positive right now. And I think Jack, you know, Filipowski came out here, humongous game, played great, Duke dominated in the paint. And I just thought that I loved his body language. I love that he was laughing during the game. And I know it's easy to do that when you're destroying a team. But I thought this one was personal for him going against a UVA team that I know that we beat them in the ACC championship last year. But after what happened in Charlottesville last year, I have to imagine he had this one circled.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was – I'm still mad. That was – I think that's the only donut he's ever had in his career, right?
He should have had two.
He should have had at least one.
Right.
I'm not going to say he should have had two. I hope he would have, but we don't know. He would have made at least one. That's all that was going to be needed. There was no time on the clock, but he was still fouled. The ACC straight up said he was fouled. They said that was an inappropriate way for the rule to be executed. It was... I'm sure he was upset. He's been a victim of a lot of things in his career. That's certainly one of them he's going to remember because it cost his team a win.
Mm-hmm.
He was mad. I mean, come on. We haven't seen him get up like that since Countdown. Exactly. But we haven't seen him get up like that since Countdown. So I'm going to say that. That was personal.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
don't even try, TK.
Pablo was here. I'm just, trying to, But anyway, AC, I'll say this, that, one of the things that I've been hearing from a lot of Duke fans over the last two games is that, UVA is not that good, and obviously no Louisville's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be the first to admit, UVA did not play very good. They missed a lot of bunnies that were just short-armed and, they were just flat out flat. They weren't good. They didn't seem like they had the energy of a normal UVA team, a normal Tony Bennett team in a big game. Also, I think that both things can be true, that Duke's just trending at this point. And Duke, I want to give D a little bit of credit here that, when we were doing our predictions for the UVA game, I think we all kind of said, Pablo, I know for sure, said this is going to be a really tough game. I say 68-62. AC, I think you were pretty much about the same,
I was at 68-50. Like, I knew we were going to beat this team.
Okay, all right. So,
I mean, I'll get to it in a minute. I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to get to it.
Sure, yeah. So, anyway, I wanted to give D a little bit of credit here because one of the things that I didn't see happening was what he said is like, you set the tone early. You're Duke. Don't worry about what UVA is doing. Set the tone early. Just blitz them out of the gate. And I think that's exactly what Duke did. I didn't see that happening because I thought that it's just UVA. They play slow, and there's not much you can do when a team's running the shot clock on offense down, 30 seconds every time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll let you have the floor here because, you said, 68-50? Like, go ahead. Like, yeah, so.
Well, it was my biggest thing was, can we hit shots? And I felt like the way we've been playing and the way we've been trending, we've been hitting shots and we're playing at home. So that's the recipe to beating a team like UVA that's going to force you into 64 possessions in a game. The possessions you get, you got to hit shots. And this is one of the things we said about this team earlier in the season, is that regardless of how fast you play or how many possessions you get, this team in particular is going to be pretty efficient because of how we shoot the three. We're a good three-point shooting team. And just the nature of the shots that we get. So, and we get to the line, which is key. So, like, that was the thing. That's the reason why I felt like we were going to beat this team by double digits, was A, because UEA was trending down, B, because we're trending up, and then C, because of just the matchup itself. We have now, after UVA, we've essentially faced everything that you can possibly face in a tournament. Fast teams, big teams, teams with big guards, teams that slow you down, teams that play pack line, teams that play zone. Teams that go back door. All those things. We have now faced all those things. We have tape and game plans to face all of these different types of teams, and we've succeeded against almost all of them. And one of the things that I love about this team is if we have failed at something, we have learned and adjusted from it. That's the biggest thing about this squad. And that makes me feel so good going into the tournament, is that it's not the same things beating us over and over and over again. It's, okay, we see something new. We didn't do it right, so we'll adjust. And you're going to get that with a young coach 2 years in on the job. You know what I'm saying? Like, and a young team. So, I feel so good about the squad. Like, I really do. Like, this is not just what we say every year, which is we're going to win it all, and every bracket I put down, Duke's going to be in the national championship or whatever. No, there is a clear path on how this team can win a title. And it starts with just the personnel that we have. I really do think that we have kind of faced everything we could possibly face now at this point in the tournament, except for the big giant Zach Edey, which I'm telling you, I'm not.
I'm terrified. I'm terrified of Zach Edey. Oh my God. Someone calm me down right now.
Yeah.
If I had told you guys that Duke was going to go 6 of 19 from three, only shoot 10 free throws, make seven of them, and Jeremy Roach and Jeremy Cain combined for 13 points, but we would beat UVA by 25, would you have believed me?
Now, yes. With this team, yes.
Like, I would have believed you.
Under tradition. Sorry, Jack, you go first. You go first.
I would have believed you because it would have meant Flip had an explosive game. And he very much has needed that. It also means Proctor showed up. You don't win that game, even if Mark Mitchell shows up. And Mark Mitchell had his 10, but he only had 10.
That's it.
But even if Mitchell shows up, Roach and McCain combined for 13, that's not enough to win. So that means that Proctor and Filipowski, the guys who we expected to be the team leaders all year, showed up. And that's a good thing.
And the other side of that is you're facing a team that can't score. You are dictating the game defensively. And because of all of those factors, like, and again, like I was just talking about, we have now dealt with all those scenarios where these guys aren't scoring, that guy's not scoring, that guy's not scoring, and we still can win a game. And I'll still stand by it. If somebody shuts Mark Mitchell down, good job you, and you probably beat us in the tournament. That's kind of it, man. That's kind of it, in my opinion. But defensively, we've shown now how nasty we are. This is a really good defensive team, man. Really good defensive team. We're not immune to, like, you saw it against Wake Forest. They kind of picked on Jared McCain a little bit against that Wake Forest game. But I think we'll be able to scheme out of that. We can scheme anybody's offense out of a game. We did that against UVA. UVA has not been good for the past couple weeks, so let's not act like they're a great team right now. But we exploited something that they don't do well, which is they don't make twos well at all. So we exploited that.
Yeah, I think that's that really. Yeah, I was just gonna say that. I think that's really it. Like, you look at UVA recently; they haven't been good. Obviously, Louisville's terrible. We know that. Mm-hmm. But it's your job as a great team, a team that's ascending, to go ahead and beat different teams in different ways, getting different players involved, and dominate them from Jump Street. And that's what we did in both of those games. Neither one of those games were close. Both of those first halves were over before the 10-minute mark in the first half. And that's what you want to see, like, just take care of business. And I think that was the original credit that I was trying to give to D, is that I was like, all right, yeah, you're right. just go ahead and blow him out. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think that was really possible on the Tony Bennett team, but I think he might be on the way out anyway. So that could be something. But
really,
yeah,
I don't think.
Ooh, spicy.
I do.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, I don't think it is a hot take. I really don't. I think that he doesn't seem like he wants to be around this, you know, current state of college basketball. He doesn't want to be the face of the ACC. I just don't think that he wants to be that guy. I could be wrong.
If he leaves, it's under his own accord.
He is not getting fired.
If he leaves, it's under his own accord. I would not be shocked if he left. But neither here nor there. That's an off-season topic. What is current right now is the way that this new team is playing. I felt personally like Kyle Filipowski came out here trying to make a statement.
He windmilled. The windmill was something.
It was something for sure. But, you know, I think that all the social media stuff and all the sports talk radios and the ESPN, you know, shows that are out there talking about all the different takes that you can have on this court storming and did he instigate it? Did they instigate it? Yada, yada, yada. It's all bullshit. He had to come out there and be like, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm the best player. I'm just going to set the tone. And he did that from Jump Street, and I thought that he was fantastic. I think that might have been one of the best games he's played in a Duke uniform in 2 years.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah. I would agree. And he's had some really good ones. But yeah. I think the thing that stands out with this one is what you pointed out earlier, TK, which was he seemed to be enjoying himself on the court. And he was back to yelling at Sean Stewart again. like he's good now. He's yelling at Sean Stewart. Sean messed up another assist of his. I think he was mad about that, and he was mad because Sean missed an assignment on the way back down the floor because he was worried about it jogging down the floor. But that's for coach's corner. But either way, like he was vocal. He was smiling. He was doing things on the court, just playing loose. Like he was playing loose. That was the biggest thing. And you got a 7-footer who can play loose like that, bro. I mean, it's what we've been saying all year, man. This team's built for March. You got a 7-footer who can do all that stuff. Our 7-footer is better than all the other 7-footers in the nation because none of them can do what he does. Like, so I'm
man, trash.
I'm excited. I'm excited for March, man. I really am.
It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be
I don't have a lingering doubt in the back of my mind with this tournament. I really don't.
You know, I watched this game with my buddy. And normally, you know, big game situation, we'll always get together and we'll watch the game. And it was such an easy game to watch.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was easy. Like that was no throws. Like, all right, good seeing you. I'll see you in a week. Mm-hmm. You know, for UNC and You don't always get that many of those these days where it's like, all right, big game, amped up, you know. I just kind of felt like this Duke team took that on them and said, you know what? Now, we're just going to come out here. We're going to blow you out. Yeah. And that's like a Duke team of old where you said, no, we're just better than you. And we're just going to come out and show it right away. Like, to me, like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jack.
I mean, there's not really much more to say there. That's like just immediately step on the court, you're going to lose. That was, it felt good. It felt really good as a fan. I can't really.
Well, it's the right time of year. That's the biggest thing, right? Like it's the right time of year for this.
I was telling AC before we started recording, I can't wait for the ACC tournament because we've talked about this a little. I will be there. I will be in the building all 5 days.
We're gonna be there.
I was there 5 years ago and that 5 day experience was an incredibly fun week and I can't wait to do it again. I can't wait to do it with this Duke team specifically just because of how good they look right now. This is a team that is like everyone always says, oh, Duke teams peak in November, December. This team's playing its best basketball right now.
For the second straight year in a row.
Yeah.
We told y'all this is built for March. Even when it looked like before the season, before any of the losses or anything else, we said that this team was built for March. It didn't matter. November, December didn't matter with this team. It never did. It never mattered with this team.
No, we haven't brought up Jeremy Roach. We haven't brought up for the most part, you know, Tyrese product there. We haven't brought up, you know, any of the play of Sean Stewart yet. Ryan Young.
He played great, by the way. Sean, shout out to him.
I wanted to just give a shout out to, you know, Jack, you probably know this better than I do. I saw a stat, I believe, that says something like Sean Stewart, players that played a certain amount of minutes, it's like the highest 100 rebounding. Minutes plus. Yeah, like that's
rebounding crazy. Percentage.
Right.
He's leading, Sean Stewart has the highest rebounding rate percentage in the country. Right. It's offensive rebounding rate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Offensive rate. Yeah, there you go. I mean, but, you know, that, and it's funny that you brought up the fact that, like, Kyle was pointing at him and stuff like that. Because there were a couple moments in that game where, you know, Sean just, you know, tried to do a little too much. And he's like, all right, you know, and he screwed it up. It was like trying to initiate the break or, mm-hmm. you know, try to, mm-hmm. you know, make a play where it wasn't there. And
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, I said the same thing about Jeremy McCain. I can live with it because you're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to play hard. I'm okay with it because you're playing hard and you're doing the right things overall. You make a couple mistakes, get it. And I'll be hard on Jeremy McCain here. Jeremy McCain, there's one thing that he needs to clean up. He needs to stop continuing to go into the lane when there's nothing there and then kind of getting himself stuck.
Mm-hmm. And that was like early November, Jared.
But it's still happening.
He's regressing to it occasionally. It's
he is. He kind of got rid of it, and now it's back.
That's kind of like the thing that I'm like, Jared, don't do that. You know, just kind of play within yourself. But, you know, the thing with Sean Stewart, though, I'll live with whatever he does because he's playing so hard. You know, he had, 10-9 against Louisville or something like that. And
9-9, yep.
Yeah, he's just a guy that goes out there, and he's a thing that you can't game plan for because mm-hmm. we're not running anything for him and he's just going out there and grabbing every rebound above the rim.
He's just a monster.
The last couple of games, which we actually did, which I this is the thing I like to see, and this is where you get the trust from the coach. John is clearly preparing him because he actually not that this is going to happen in March. He did run a few things for Sean to kind of get him in game flow, and I think that's kind of what happened. I think he's just out there trying to make plays, right, which I'm very happy with. He played 15 minutes against UVA. That's probably 3 or 4 too many just because of some of the mistakes you saw. When he's on the floor for more than like 3 minutes at a time, you kind of see those mistakes creep in.
Right.
He's the sprinter. He's really his most effective when you can get him in like 2 minute bursts where he comes in for somebody to give him a breather, does some good work for those couple of minutes, grabs those boards, whatever else it is. And then he sits on down and then we play some poised basketball with our starters, which I think you're going to see in March. I don't think you're going to see him playing extended minutes. So yeah, we're just preparing him for all the different situations he's going to have to run into as well. So, I mean, that's what I like about, That's what I really like about Sean. And then one of the things about Jared that you brought up, like you said, some of those mistakes he's making, I think some of that's forcing it again because he's not getting the ball right now. It's not like he's out there like trying to play hero ball. It's not like he's out there trying to do that type of stuff. I think he's just trying to find spots where he can because right now John's not running plays for him, which I'm okay with. I think John's doing that by design. I think Jared made his big entrance onto the stage. Now he's a part of people's game plan. So now John's kind of ran them back a little bit. This is some veteran coach shit that he's doing right now. Like he's now bringing Jared back. He's running plays for Flip again. He's running plays for Reese again, not really running plays for Jeremy as much right now. Like, which that says to me, like you go in the March, you can run plays for all 5 of the players on the floor that you have, at least with the starters, like not talking about Ryan, not talking about Sean Stewart. With the starters, you can run plays for all those dudes, man.
So basically what you're saying,
it's really good.
If I can understand this real quick, it's kind of like you're in like the Kentucky Derby and you're holding the horse back a little bit.
Yes.
And you're like, all right, thank God Pablo's not here. But you're holding the horse back a little bit and like you know the horse that you have. And when it's go time, you let the horse go. And that's kind of like this team where like, okay, I already know what I have with McCain. Everybody knows when we have with Jeremy Roach. And it's like, okay, let me kind of sprinkle in, get Flip more involved now. We've already done it with Mark Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, you know, trying to do different things. And
real quick, if I may, like, look at the rest of the ACC. North Carolina has to run game through RJ Davis. They have no choice.
They have no choice.
Otherwise, they look like
ass. 100% true.
Like,
and that is exactly why I don't believe that they're going to go anywhere.
Exactly. You know, Notre Dame's got to run through Burton. Yeah, you go down the list. Beekman's got to do it for UVA. PJ Hall's got to do it for Clemson. Who's that?
Beekman.
For UVA? UVA.
It's Beekman. It's just is he going to get the job done?
No,
it's not about getting the job done. No, it's not about getting the job done. Right. It's about Duke is not a one-trick pony.
Correct. Like, yes.
We don't have to run every play through Flip. We don't have to run every play through Mark. We don't got to run it through Reese, Jeremy, McCain. We don't have to run it through any of those guys. We can run it through those guys. And we've now won multiple games down the stretch showcasing a player here or there. And it's a different player every game. That's big time, man. That's big time. It's you can't even say that for, like, some of the best teams in the nation. UConn, it's got to be Spencer or it's got to be Newton. If they don't have one of those guys at least, if not two, they're toast. Like, I don't care about clinging. Those guys have to do it for them. We can survive anybody having a bad game except for Mark Mitchell. It's the only one. That's the only one. So good luck if you can game plan Mark out of a game.
Can I really quickly just – I just want to say something. So Duke has won three of their last four games, and those three wins – have all been by a margin of 25 or more. I'm going to read off the top two leading scorers for those three games. Miami game, we had Jeremy led the team in scoring with 16. Flip and Mark both had 15.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville, Roach and Mitchell. And then Virginia, Flip and Proctor. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of diversity at the top. I mean, it goes back further.
Yeah.
I mean, you go back to Florida State.
Roach even break double figures in that game? Yeah, he had 17.
I think he had 17.
Oh, 17. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's on me. But, like, outside of that, you know, a lot of balance. Go back to the first Wake game. Flip and mm-hmm. It was Mitchell, Flip, and then McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell 23, Filipowski 21, McCain 17, Roach 12. Like, there's been a lot of balance and a lot of different guys going and attacking for Duke lately. And I really, you can't stop all five guys at once. And I think you really have to beat Duke in March.
I think, Jack, you brought it up against Miami that the favorite thing that you had coming out of that game was the fact that it was so balanced and that you had no idea who was scoring the ball for Duke. And I was like, oh, I have to take a look at the box. Oh, it was Roach that led the team in scoring. I had no idea. Because it was like Roach had 17, and this person had 16, this person had 15, this person had 14. Like, and that's the point. It's like, it's so balanced. Who are you going to pick? And it's like the Florida State game was kind of an outlier. And it's great that it was an outlier because McCain goes on for 35, which he's capable of doing.
They're all capable of doing it.
And the thing is that, like, you have the game plan for that, and then what happens? You have four or five other guys that you game plan against one of them, which is what was happening at the beginning of the year, where you're always game planning to double flip. And it took some of our team more time to, like, figure it out and figure out what their roles were and how they're going to be playing. And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you can't just focus on flip.
Not to mention, Flip's a decent passing threat now.
And you can't just focus on McCain. You can't just focus on Jeremy. And maybe AC are right. That focus on, here's the blueprint to beat Duke. Focus on Mark Mitchell. And
Here's what I've liked. We have multiple players who can do it in the game. But sometimes that just means you don't have a guy you can go to. We've proven we have go-to guys. That's the other part of it. Like, Jeremy McCain can be a go-to any second. Roach can be a go-to in a second. Reese, I mean, I can name the starting five. Any of those guys can be a go-to at any point. We have five guys in the starting lineup who take eight or more shots and shoot 45% from the field on those eight or more shots plus. Like, that's
rare. That's rare, even for Duke.
That's a recipe for disaster for the rest of the country. I really mean that. I'm not just shitting sunshine and rainbows right now. I'm telling you right now. Like, I know everybody's got their. They've got the hit it. Everybody's got their teams that they're favorites, and UConn and Purdue. You can have all those. You can Houston have them. Take all of them, man, because they can't match up with what we have. They can't.
Took Houston a prayer to beat Oklahoma. Like, yep.
That's their second prayer in the last couple of games. Whatever, man. It's all good.
Something like that. Yeah.
That was a great game, by the way.
It was actually fantastic.
Yesterday was a beautiful day in college basketball.
Yes, it was.
Really. Yeah. Except for the one game outside of Duke that I actually watched the entirety of, which was Bama versus Tennessee. That game was disgusting.
That was a bad game. And I watched a little bit of the NC State North Carolina game, but like that.
I watched
game,
a bit of that, I saw State score like 4 points.
Exactly. I turned it on, and State was up 4 in the second half to begin the second half, and as soon as I turned it on, like Carolina went on a run. I'm like, all right, not for me. I'm done. Mm-hmm. But that's typical. But what's not typical is the fact that this new team has, I mean, just a lot of different weapons. You can't game plan for just one of them. We have a lot of different ways to beat you. Again, AC, before we move it on to the mailbag, mm-hmm. I want to just bring this up real quick. Like, I keep coming back to this. Is if we cut down the unforced turnovers, I feel like we're going to be fine.
I don't think you can totally get rid of that, and I think we can withstand turnovers. We can withstand turning the ball over.
I don't care if we turn it over if we're forced, but the unforced drive me nuts.
I mean, I don't think
it does.
You can...
It does, but you're never going to have a perfect game. Yeah, I'll say it real quick. I'll give you the TLDR version. You're never going to have a perfect game. There's always going to be a dumb turnover or two in a game, and that's not something that will ever kill this team in particular. That's the quick version.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say basically the same thing. Like, you're never going to fully eliminate unforced turnovers. NBA teams have them. Like, it's going to happen.
The ones I don't like are when we try to drive into the lane, we get stuck between three people and we can't get the ball out. If we make a bad turnover because we're trying to move the ball across the court or something within the framework of the offense, I'm cool with that. But yeah. What was it? Was it Louisville? Second half of Louisville, I think, where we were just turning the ball over like nuts.
It was the first half of Louisville. It was so sloppy, and even Roach and Shire were talking about it after the game. Where, you know, it was like
that stuff I don't like. I'm with you on that one, TK. We start doing that in a high-pressure game, then, yeah, I mean.
Well, that's the thing. In a game like that where you know you're going to blow them out, that's one thing. But I hate the fact that, like, don't come in with that. Like, don't come in with that attitude where we know we're going to blow them out because they're an inferior team, because that develops bad habits.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. That's the part I don't like. Is like, because those, it's not like those turnovers were Jalen Blake's and Spencer Hubbard. Those turnovers were our starters against a really bad team.
Spencer Hubbard, player of the year, but
shout out to Spence for that. I didn't know this. He's descended from the Duke family.
Oh yeah.
I did not know that. His great, 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 great grandfather is Washington Duke.
Gets up.
Someone tweeted it.
What?
That's pretty cool.
Shout out to Spencer Hubbard's NIL.
Amazing. I didn't know how to follow that up yet. But either way, two big wins. Duke, again, is trending in the right direction. We said it before the Wake Forest loss. Oh, by the way, speaking of trending, Jack, Wake Forest.
Shouts to the Hokies. Let's go.
Unbelievable.
Trending down.
It's not even unbelievable. So I'm going to stick by this prediction here. And I want, because I like my audience, I want you all to make money. And so, you know, we don't have it here yet in North Carolina, but sports gambling is going to be coming to North Carolina in the next week, I believe. I think it's 3-11.
So they say, yeah.
Right? So, next year, it may not work this year, but next year, what I want you all to do is that any game, and we're not going to lose many next year, I'm going to just put that out there, but any game we lose, just throw the house, your mortgage, your college tuition for your children, throw it all on the team that just beat Duke to lose the next game. You will be a millionaire in no time. Honestly, Wake Forest just proved it yet again. If you had bet, so Duke has lost 6 games this year. If you had bet against the team that beat Duke, each of those 6 times, you'd be 4-2 this year. Yep. So you'd be in the plus. So that is going to be my betting game plan going forward, and I encourage everybody to do the same. I'm not telling you who to bet on, just telling you what I would do.
Wake might lose the next two. They got Georgia Tech and they got Clemson.
This is not official gambling advice, and 5-Point Play Podcast is not responsible for any financial losses suffered as a result of listening to TK.
Thank you very much, Jeff. We gotta
cover our bases.
We got a live mailbag, though. Got a live mailbag. If you wanna,
the mail's here. Come on, guys. Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me wanna wag my tail. When it comes, I wanna wail.
Woo! All right. This is the 5-Point Play podcast mailbag brought to you by the B Hodge Natty Scoreboard.
Yeah.
B Hodge Natty Light Scoreboard. If you want to know more about it, join our Discord. You can find that on our Patreon. Please join our Patreon. And
you can ask us mailbag questions on the Discord that you can access through the Patreon.
Right. You can find more about it. And we have a mailbag section on the Discord, as Jack brought up, and we got plenty of them. But again, brought to you by the B Hodge Natural Light Scoreboard.
Shout out to B Hodge from Spaces. Shout. He's a homie.
Shout.
So we got the first question from Better, who's one of our favorite posters over there on the Discord. Is Sean Stewart ready to be a consistent part of the rotation, and is the game slowing down for him?
No, not slowing down for him.
Okay.
Yes, he will be part of the rotation. I don't see him as a regular part of the rotation. Kind of like we were talking about. He will have regular spots that he gets subbed in for, but I don't – for the stretch – I don't think he's going to play like I mentioned before, he's a sprinter. You play him those couple of 2 or 3 minutes tops, and then you get him out, because you give him 2 more minutes after that, and he's going to turn the ball over. He's going to foul somebody. He's going to turn it over again, and then there's going to be a 5 to 7 point swing created by issues that Sean Stewart had on the court, where all you really need, especially in March, is just to give your main players just 5 minutes of relief on the floor. So if he can split his 10 minutes a game between Mark and between Flip, I'm good with it, man. That's all we need. We don't need 20 from him. We don't need 30 from him.
Jack, go ahead.
I mean, Grayson Allen, his freshman year, I'm not going to say it's going to be the same role, but that's basically what he was. He came in to kind of spell the 3 backcourt guys that were consistently mm-hmm. ahead of him, Cook, Matt Jones, and Tyus Jones. Mm-hmm. That's what Sean is.
Jack. I was just going to say real quick, I think the difference between, and I know you're not comparing the two guys, I just want to bring this point up. The difference between those guys is Kate was running plays for Grayson Allen, whereas with Sean, I don't think you see many plays run for him other than maybe some secondary actions or something off of baselines out of bound play or whatever like that. You saw him run the all-time K, down screen, get the alley-oop on the baseline out of bounds. That's a play K's been running for years. But so you saw him run that play. I think that's the most you get out of him in terms of we're running the play for you. Everything else is going to be, he's the 4 loco. It's what he does, man. Like, he comes out, you have no clue. You can't even fathom what he's about to do. And then he does it. Either side of the coin.
The 4 loco thing happen. I love it.
He's 4 loco, man. It's like calling him 4 loco.
Yeah, no, I agree with the fact that they're not going to run plays for him per se. I think I hear what Jack's saying in terms of he's a guy that you can't really game plan for. And that's what really happened in the 2015 year. Part of that was by design. I don't think this year was by design. I think this year was Sean just wasn't ready to play.
I think it was by design. I called it back in December.
You said that. If I remember,
I'm going to tell you what I know is that he was not ready to play, and they did not expect him to play much.
Right, and that's what you said, right? That he wasn't ready.
Yeah, he wasn't ready yet. All the stuff about he's practicing bad. No, it's not that he's practicing bad. It's not that he's disconnected. It's not that he doesn't care. All the things that were being said about it. This is development. We say it over and over. I think we've said it every podcast. You wanted development. You wanted the 4-year, 3-year guy back, and now you got it. This is what happens. Maybe he's not ready in November, December, but your team is not built for November, December. Your team is built for March. If you want to win a title, you got to win in March. Who cares what you did in November?
Maybe he's not ready for January. Maybe he's coming into form, mid-February, and that's okay. And because guess what?
He can do that.
But guess what? Like, when that happens, now you have half of November, December, January, and half of February where you don't see any tape on this guy, and now all of a sudden you got to factor that in.
Speaking of which, do we have a Foster question?
We do have a Foster question, but I want to ask my own question kind of off of this one.
Okay.
And it's about TJ Power.
Yep.
And it kind of goes to the Foster point that you're going to probably bring up, but we do have a Foster question. But the question I was going to ask is that, and I have my own opinion on this, but I want to hear yours. Is that after the Wake Forest game, obviously, you know, the immediate reaction, we had no idea that Taylor Fawson was going to be out. Jalen Blanks played, let's be honest here, very poorly. And I thought...
And his last major minutes at Duke.
And the reality is that it opened up an opportunity again for the second time this year for TJ Power. And I think that John has now kind of said, you know what? I have an opportunity here before we get into tournament time to get him some minutes. I don't think that he played great against Louisville. I thought he played much better against UVA. And to me, it's like, all right, John saying, we have a guy who's 6'7", 6'8", who can shoot, stretch the floor, and his defensive liabilities aside, he's a guy that can contribute and give us an added dimension. So I'm going to try to get him minutes. He's much the same to me as Sean Stewart.
Absolutely.
Like adding another element that you have no game tape on.
And I don't think that TJ is as bad defensively as it's made out to be because of the offensive side of the ball and the way he can swing it. If he gives up two, he's going to get three. So you come out plus one. But I saw against UVA, and like you mentioned, he played very well against UVA. I saw him make some really smart decisions on the defensive side of the ball. Some switch plays where he went to the exact right spot, just followed the scout. If this happens, you go straight here. He didn't second guess himself. He didn't, you know, he didn't make a bad move or overcommit or anything. He just went right where he was supposed to, and it was beautiful defense. And so, no, do I think that every single game he should play a bunch of minutes and because he's a good defender? No, I'm not saying that, but I am saying that he's not Luke Kennard. Like, if he's on the floor at the very least with his 6'9" frame, you put him on somebody who's 6'2", 6'3", you're going to bother the shot at the very least. So, I mean, if we are going to miss some extended time with Caleb, which I think we will, and we'll get to it, but I'm happy with this move, and I'm happy that it's working out as well as it has. We've seen all season that TJ can shoot. We've seen that, and we don't need him to dribble on any other stuff. Just as long as he can maintain this is what we wanted at Joey Baker, a guy who could hit these shots. We wanted Joey to do that. He never could do it. TJ's doing what Joey couldn't do. Just saying.
Took the words out of my mouth.
It's true. Go ahead, Jeff.
Took the words out of my mouth. TJ Power is doing exactly what Kay wanted Joey Baker to do, and Joey Baker could never consistently do. And this is, look, for me, it's all love for Joey. Joey Buckets, as I called him. This is a dude who could shoot the lights out one night and then pump fake, step in, and brick a two out of the rotation the very next game. TJ has scored 9 points in the last two games, which is more points than he has scored in the 2024 calendar year before. He is very much playing himself, I think, into more consistent rotation minutes at the guard spot. I think he's going to be a mainstay at the backup two spot. I would not be shocked if
8 to 10 minutes. You put him on the floor with two ball handlers so that you don't have to worry about that, and he can play 8 to 10 minutes.
I mean, these are minutes we were talking about for Sean earlier in the season. It's everyone expected Sean to be the immediately ready guy. It looks like TJ might be taking that over,
I think Sean's was by design. I think TJ's has been by coincidence. Not that he just all of a sudden can play. Like John has been grooming TJ for the fact that if this then that whole math thing. If this happens, then I need you ready and I need you to be able to do this. Like that's why you saw the clip of Carewell clapping on the side, talking about all the work he's put in and all the other stuff. You know what I mean?
That was not an accident.
Not an accident. Yeah. They're telling us what they think, which is he's worked, he's done what he's supposed to do, and if this, then that. And now we're on that. I think Sean's was by design where they're like, we need a secondary defender down low. John tried to get it with the big man all offseason, couldn't get it. We need that. And Sean can provide that. He showed that he could provide that earlier in the season. So I think his was by design, whereas I think TJ's has been coincidental. But goddamn, if that kid is not taking over that role, man, like, good for him.
Seriously. I do want to correct one thing. It's not a math thing. It's a computer science thing. That is what my degree is in, and I will make sure that it is not a disrespected field on this podcast.
Damn.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
I didn't know I had more enemies.
So our second question comes from Joe. the question here is that after timeouts or out of bounds plays, they feel like they've been really good this year, generally commenting on them. How important are they going to be going forward?
You can go first, Jack.
I mean, that I think they've always been and will continue to be extremely important. That was John's. That was what John did, was the baseline out of bounds, the ATOs, when he was one of the lead assistants. That was his job, was drawing those up. And he's continued to be very, very strong in that department as a head coach. I'm not going to say it's going to make or break a game, because who the hell knows, but if it does, I won't be shocked. I'll say that. I think they're important. I'm not going to go as far as saying they're crucial, but I think they're very important for momentum and player confidence, and potentially it could be game altering, but I'm not going to go as far as to say definitely. I
mean, those plays are extremely important. It's the special teams of football. Like it's very important.
That's a good comparison.
Like you said, Jack, it's not one of those things that makes or breaks the game. Like you can't say we lost the game because we didn't execute our blobs or our slobs or whatever. But there are those things like in the Wake Forest game where 2 or 3 points really matter. If you can get 8, 9, 11 points on your sidelines and baseline out of bounds plays, like those are essentially free. That's free money. Like it's not coming down the court, having to set up. That's a play within 2 or 3 seconds. That's when time is crucial. That's vital. When time is a factor, that's super vital, man. To be able to score within 5 seconds off of a set play, like that's every coach's dream.
I just want to really quickly remind everyone about the blob lobs, as I frequently called them, and that's pretty self-explanatory. That they ran with Mark Williams. Like that's easy. That's free money. It's you take it. It's going to be important. I really like the way John's been going after it this year, and I'm excited
he's
been to
in
see
his
you.
Bag dog. He's
he really has.
Tricks.
He well, really has.
The one that I actually wanted to bring up about this, because I actually love this question, because I got it a lot earlier in the day and I had to think about it myself. I feel like he's been kind of holding his bag back a little bit and hasn't been showing it. And then all of a sudden, in the last couple of games, I've been like, all right, I'm seeing a little bit more of what we're capable of in these positions. Because, you know, like you guys said, this was John's specialty. Like when he was, you know, associate head coach for K, he was the one that was designing a lot of these out-of-bounds plays and after-timeout plays. And, you know, that was K's thing. That was K's thing as well, where, you know, coming out of timeouts, he always had a play ran that more often than not yielded a basket. And so when you're looking at these tight games, you brought up the Wake Forest game, every play matters. Every play matters. And so every time you can get a bucket, anytime you get an easy bucket, that matters. And I think for a guy, you know, because I remember a couple of them against Louisville, which I think was done for a multitude of reasons, one of which was to get Sean Stewart, like, really – you know, amped up and involved, that pays dividends going forward. But in the game, it is, you know, that's an easy two. That's an easy two. And so it provides.
Make the tough
twos. Yep. It's just like, go back and play defense now. We don't have to worry about anything else. We just got an easy one. And so if you're an opposing coach, you have to now game plan for that, knowing that the other guy on the other sideline is capable of exploiting your defense and getting an easy bucket. So
this is the genius of John Shire. All season, we've talked about it. And on this show, we've talked about what happened to the short rolls. Why are we not running those anymore? Or why aren't we running some of these lift screens and floppy screens and things that we had been running before? Well, we don't run horns anymore. You know, throughout this season, we have said that on this podcast multiple times because we're witnessing it, we're watching it. And again, by design, I think John was like, okay, we're this segment of time, we are working on these things, short roll, this and that. For this game, we're going to work on these things. We need to make this right. And so now you're seeing the fruits of that labor. Everybody's like, oh, well, before we can't beat 10 teams by 10, and now all of a sudden we're beating teams by 25. What that means is you're no longer playing slave to the game plan. Like your team is playing free, and all the things that you've worked on all season are coming together right now. And that's what you see when you see a team beating teams by 25 towards the end of a season when all your game tape has been put out there and you've been running through the conference late, and now we're beating teams by 25. Who else, at least in our conference, who else can you say is doing that? Because the number one team in the conference ain't doing that shit. Clemson ain't doing that. Wake Forest definitely ain't doing that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, John, he's running everything now. Everything he has put together all season, he's now doing it every game. And this is why you be patient, y'all, because when it was fire John Shire because he can't make game adjustments, he wasn't – the adjustments you wanted him to make, he wasn't – what he was doing is purposeful. It's not – you can't sit there and say on your couch you know better than John Shire. You don't. I'll tell you right now, you don't. So I think a lot of this has been by design, man. That's what we said all season. We're built for March. You're seeing it now.
Yeah, well, we're 23 and 6. And
wait, what month is it right now? Remind me.
Jeremy Roach.
Sorry. Yes.
All right, so we got three more questions. They're kind of a we're trying to make these quick, but one of them, and I was hoping Pablo was on here for this one. There's been a lot of rumors out there about Kamon potentially committing soon to somewhere.
Somewhere.
I'll give you this one. I don't know if you have any inside info. I think we're all hearing kind of the same things. But, you know, again, this is why I want to pop
the hearsay thing, right? Like, yeah. You know, we're not going to give you anything definitive if we don't have it. The thing that has the most traction is that the decision should come before the tournament within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's the most I got. Like, yeah, we've talked about and exhausted everything else, the connections to Ding and all the other things, G League going down, all that stuff, like G League Ignite. So yeah,
Jack, do you have anything to add there? I think we're all.
I'm gonna go back to the March 1986 Sports Illustrated cover.
Sure, he was there for that.
I totally was. Yeah, Mark Allery on the cover. Okay. It says Duke's the team to beat. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
There we go. Agreed. And there's not much more to be said. Like, I wouldn't trade our position is kind of the thing. The other one, and I want to go to you for this one first, Jack. I know we, as a podcast, talked about this. Better is also asked about the fact of the current views of the ACC as a conference. There's been a lot of ACC coaches and media this week pointing out the flaws in the NET and how other conferences have manipulated it to make their conferences look better and boost their tourney biz. Do you think the ACC is better than the rating this year, and do we deserve 5 to 6 teams in this or less than 5?
I think 5 to 6... If you asked me this a week ago, I would say 5 to 6 is reasonable. I'm less sure now because
Wake Forest lost twice.
Of Wake and Pitt and Virginia all kind of rotting away a little bit this week. I will say this. I will say that I think the ACC is better than they're rated right now. I will also say I like the net rankings. I think there's no perfect way to rank. That's why it's a committee of people. And they use the net ranks to inform. That being said, it is possible to game the system. I don't think that what Brownell and Capel said, especially Capel said, he's talking about these teams having an average non-con margin of victory of 27, which is literally exactly his non-conference margin of victory this year.
He really did.
I will say this though. I don't necessarily think it's, I think it's like the entirety of conferences like the Big 10, Big 12, top to bottom had really good non-conference performances this year, whereas the ACC didn't.
We kind of did though.
Louisville.
Yeah. I mean,
Duke beat Louisville by 25 and fell in the rankings. That's the issue, is that the schools at the bottom with really bad losses are weighing everyone else down because you have to beat them by like 40 to stay like to stand pat in the net rankings.
That's the problem. Every conference has one of those teams. We're not
the thing is that they
has Louisville.
Can I bring up a scenario real quick?
Yes.
What about a team like Notre Dame?
That's the issue. A team like Notre Dame.
A team like Notre Dame who started terrible. They have a brand new coach, and now all of a sudden, you know, they won a couple in a row. They are, you know, yes, they're 7-11 in conference, and, you know, 16-13 overall, but they're beating good teams. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, is that now a bad loss? Because they're playing really well and they're starting to figure it out. And next year, they probably will be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
No, like, I mean, it's a worthless loss is what it is. Cause it's not a team that is going to vault in.
But that's my standings. Point. Is like,
yeah. Those are vulture teams. Even,
yeah.
Yeah. Those are vulture teams.
They're now better.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's so fickle. I think margin of victory in the original calculations that they used in the first two seasons, margin of victory, I believe, was capped at 15 or 20, and then they stopped calculating anything after that. And I think they stopped doing that or changed the margin gap to be higher.
Whatever, the ZNET, it all right now, it all kind of
that's
stinks.
I mean, and that's the issue. I think it needs a little bit of reworking, but I also think that the current system is better than any that they have ever had in the past for determining rankings. Again, not to say it's perfect. Yeah. It's not. That's the thing. Again, this is such an imperfect science, especially mm-hmm. in something like college basketball, that there's never going to be, like, no one's ever going to be happy with it. And, mm-hmm. like, you know,
and the thing about the tournament, if there's a question about you getting in, you should have done better. Bottom line, man, like, at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to. And you heard Scott Van Pelt talk about it, and he was kind of in the same boat we were talking about. He was saying, if you want the scores to increase, then play better teams. Like, it's up to you to schedule. And that's kind of where we are with this thing, man.
Like, John's done a great job. Yeah. John's done a great job getting tough. Like, we lost to Arizona at home. So be it. That was a great game of college basketball. It was a close, competitive game.
Arkansas
was unfortunate
because that's a team that looked like they would have been a top 15 team.
That was a good loss at the time. That was a quality loss at the time. Now they're Q3.
Mm-hmm.
That's tragic. Baylor?
Ultimately, I think we get five in.
Baylor was a beautiful job by John of getting a good game. They just beat Kansas. They very possibly might get the one seed in the Big 12 tournament.
Kansas is going to be the number one team in the country after this week, so...
Yeah, and all the losses, yeah. And they had Kevin McCullough. Can't be an excuse because he played. But anyway,
I think this is the big thing. Kansas, Baylor just beat Kansas. Baylor, it's going to be Baylor or Houston. One of those two teams is going to win the Big 12 regular season, and it won't be Kansas for the first time since before Bill Self.
Point, Jack, is that, like, why is it okay for a conference – you know, they always say the ACC is, it's top-heavy, Duke, UNC. But when the Big 12 happens and Kansas wins it for 9 years in a row, that's not okay.
Right.
Hey, I mean, the Big 12, to me right now, in terms of how, like, the outside looking in, it feels like the ACC from 2018-19. Where that ACC had 3-1 seeds and the national champion and the team that should have been the national champion.
Correct.
Like, and Florida State was insanely good that year. They didn't get a one. Like, that's what they remind me of. Kansas, Baylor, Houston. Who else? There's another one.
I'm not sure. Well, I want to keep with
ACC. It's beside the point. That's just what I'm saying. Like, it reminds me of what the ACC was viewed as in 18-19.
If the ACC tournament is allowed to help a team get into the tournament or solidify their spot, I know it's not going to help Duke jump from a 3 to a 2 or anything, but at least the other teams are at the bottom. I mean, you're talking about UNC getting in, Duke getting in for sure, and then I would say Clemson is virtually a lock. But UVA, like you brought up, Jack, Pitt, and Wake are kind of just hovering around right there, and Syracuse is kind of in a spot where they could play themselves in. So I mean, you're looking at possible teams.
Syracuse is 20-10. Like, they have 20 wins.
When you talk about Duke trending, Syracuse is trending.
They are too. They are, man. And you're talking about 7 teams, and you're talking about 3 of them being So that's the difference of having 4 teams in the tournament and when you're P5 and having like 5, 6, 7 teams. That's a big difference when you look at it overall. But whatever. The biggest thing is thank you, ACC, for helping us prepare for this tournament because Duke is ready for everything.
Seriously, it's going to be
teams, I think we can get five in. I think we can get five in from the conference. I think we should get five
in. I wouldn't be shocked. I think we should, yes.
I think we will get five, but we'll see. Let's move on here to the NC State game we have coming up here Monday night in Raleigh. Again, thank you very much to everybody on Discord who sent in mailbag questions to the Behage Natural Light scoreboard. Really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And actually, Behage actually threw a question in, and I wanted to save it for this one. He wanted to know who for Duke is going to guard DJ Burns.
I guess you run flip at him. I mean, I'm not so worried about Burns getting anybody into foul trouble. It's like if you let him kind of play that bully ball and stuff, all right, you might be in for it. But I'm not concerned about him getting flip in a bunch of foul trouble. In fact, I feel like he's going to be the one who gets into foul trouble. I mean, any center he's played in the ACC who's offensive-minded, he's been in foul trouble against this year. So this is the perfect case of stay long enough to see yourself become the villain when you should have died a hero, that whole thing from Dark Knight. Like, DJ Burns kind of outstayed his welcome over there, I think. He was so good last year, and I think that was – you saw the peak, and now you see the fall.
Well, you know, let's talk about NC State. Obviously, there are three guarantees in one death taxes and NC State blowing it against UNC. No doubt, every time.
Mm-hmm.
But then we come down to Raleigh. That might as well be the fourth guarantee in life, where Duke plays terrible in Raleigh against NC State. So, you know, we could have said the same thing about this Duke team going to Florida State, going to Miami, you know, going to Virginia Tech, places that Duke typically doesn't play well. And they have cleared all those checkboxes. Does Duke clear another one? Because, NC State, despite their record of 17-12, 9-9 in the conference, they're not a bad team. They're not a bad team. They're a team that they need to do something to have any chance.
So, well, I think that's just it for them. I think they have no chance.
I think they have an outside. I really do.
I don't think they have. I think they have no chance, and they're a dying team. Five losses in the last seven games. They're losing. They are losing. They don't have anything to lose because they've lost them all. But they are losing. But I ain't worried about it, man. Like some of those NC State games where we saw Duke teams, you know, get beaten over there in Raleigh, some of those have been early season games where the team wasn't healthy. All you know, we can make excuses. They didn't get the job done. But this is a team who's in the right spot. I don't see trap games anymore for the squad. So I don't see this as a trap game, getting ready for UNC or anything, coming off of the Saturday-Monday tilt. Before the season, this one looked like an ugly one because you thought NC State was going to be better. They're not. They're not a good team. They've proven that. And they're, once again, yet another dying star. UVA, you know, FSU, all those teams we've played, dying stars. This is another one. We're going to beat them up, man. Like, I ain't saying we're beating them by 25 again or anything, but we go to Raleigh and we beat them by 12, 13. I'm cool with it. So 82-69.
Nice. Jack.
Look, they don't have Turk. They don't have Sebron. I don't care. They have Horn and Burns. Congratulations. You have two guys named DJ.
Damn, Jack.
Cool. They are not good. They should be good, but they're not because Kevin Keats is a winner. Except when it matters most. So, look, it's going to be a Duke. If it's not a Duke win, I will be very sad. Plain and simple.
There's no reason for it not to be.
Exactly. I will be very sad if Duke does not win this game. 84-73. I feel like that's a pretty reasonable score. If they put up 73.
I'd be mad if they put up 73, that team.
Jack,
it wouldn't be my favorite.
Jack, you haven't given a prediction for a score in a while. So
yeah, I have. I did last week.
What makes you want to give a prediction for this one, though? Why are you so confident?
I feel like I've watched State enough. I mean, it's generally how well do I know the team. I'm not going to give a guess without having been informed. And I've seen State a lot this year because they seem to be on before Duke a decent bit when Duke's on ACC Network. That's it.
Yeah.
I just I feel more informed about State than I do about
our personnel
a lot
is
of the
better,
teams.
Man. Our personnel is better, like size wise, you match up well.
Our personnel is better than theirs, no matter who we play.
Yeah. But in this case, it's far better.
And AC, the reason I think they put up 73 is because I think that Spence is going to get good burn again.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that would be it. Like, I actually almost want to lower my score, man. I almost want to go 82-60. Give me another 20-point win, man. Fuck it. We're gonna be that.
I wouldn't hate a 20-point win. I'd love to be wrong on that side.
We don't want to do the court storm game again. We don't want to deal with all that shit again. I think this team is gonna go whoop ass. 82-62. Give it.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing is that every time NC State plays Carolina, we know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Every time Duke goes down to Duke goes down to NC State, we know what's going to happen.
But do we, though? I mean, last year sucked,
NC
but that was
State
last year.
Is 12-4 at home. They really aren't as bad as their record is. They are a team that, you know, I really believe is a team capable of beating a lot of teams in the country. But fuck it, because the reason that Duke is going to win this game by at minimum 15 is because we're not fucking around anymore.
Let's go.
Playtime's over. Playtime is over. And Phil Palsy tried to show that to you guys in PBA. If you don't believe him, fuck it, he'll say it again. We got UNC around the corner, but we got business first on Monday night in Raleigh. We're going to take care of business. Duke is going to win this game, 83. You know, fuck it, AC, I like it, 83-65. Let's go, ninth.
Let's go.
So, I think we got another couple, you know.
And wait, we know what Pablo would say.
Just fucking win.
There you go, man.
Just fucking win. I think we got another couple of great segments out of TJ Power and Sean Stewart.
Yep.
John Shire is rounding the rotation into form. We will get Caleb Foster back at some point because – we're playing long enough into this season when we'll get him back. Yeah. But the reality is that this Duke team is ready to fucking go.
Let's go, baby.
B-Hodge, Natty Light Scoreboard, we appreciate y'all. AC, take us out. Let's go, Duke.
Let's go, Duke, baby. 5-Point Play Podcast, you know where to find us. Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, right here on YouTube, baby. All day, all the time.
Check out the links below.
Links below.
If you're watching
Patreon, don't be late. We got the off season coming up, so you know you're gonna get some recruiting news. You know you're gonna get the transfer news. Get all that stuff before it comes out on the Twitter sphere, all over the internet. So let's go, baby. Just join us, man. 5-Point Play Podcast. Let's go, Duke.